Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we are here to hear our module on sex hormones. Take what I'm saying as education, not medical advice, especially if you're thinking about this in application to your own self. And also, when you're working with clients, please make sure that you're looking at this as you're educating them and you're coaching them, but you're not diagnosing them and you're not treating them. And it's really important to use that terminology. I can't stress that enough. And at times it seems like you are diagnosing them. You're assessing them. You're evaluating them. Just don't use the word diagnosis. Once you assess where they're at, which is the most critical part at the beginning of any process with anyone, then you'll know how to apply and coach them on lifestyle and diet and nutrition things that they can do that will restore balance. So you're not diagnosing, you're assessing and you're evaluating, you're not treating, you're not curing, you're simply rebalancing. And I take exception to a lot of these, a lot of things that come out that call something the cure. Like there's a book out, The Hormone Cure. Well, it's a hormone balancing solution. But I hesitate to call something a cure because, in my opinion, a cure is something that you can apply as is. Just take this, apply it, and it'll work for everyone. And that's not really the case. We're not looking for cures. We're looking for balance. I want to make sure that you're always doing these disclaimers with people because people can get funny and they can say, well, you told me to do this and it damaged me, or you told me to do this and it messed up my medication. They're always making sure that you're aware, and even get somebody to sign something that talks about this. But it's just a good idea not to be living in a state of paranoia, but just to make sure that there's a clear communication between you. Progesterone. Your progesterone is produced by the corpus luteum, which is after the egg has been released, that leftover follicle is called the corpus luteum. Progesterone is also secreted by the brain, produced in the brain. And progesterone can have a really profound impact on sleep and your ability to sleep. But it's also been recently studied as profoundly important for people with brain trauma, for reversing brain trauma. So that's relatively new research. It's a direct descendant of pregnenolone, right? You just go just right across to the left from pregnenolone, you got progesterone. It's a precursor to cortisol, two steps down. Again, if you're stressed, whether it's emotional stress, whether it's environmental stress, whether it's physical trauma stress, or whether it's food stress, those are all stresses. You may say, well, I meditate every day. My patient meditates every day. Why does she have these problems? Well, look at the food stresses. Look at the environmental stresses. She's sleeping on a synthetic mattress pad that's outgassing. Did they just repaint their house? All of these can affect these hormones, their stresses. Okay, so you want to protect your progesterone by protecting your adrenals, by not secreting so much cortisol, not wasting so much cortisol, not jumping to things. So really teaching them and getting them on stress management programs is vital to the health of all their hormones. It maintains the corpus luteum in pregnancy. So we'll look at the cycle, but in the second half of the cycle, the progesterone goes up to proliferate the lining of the uterus, get it ready for pregnancy. And it also stimulates the corpus luteum to not break down. So as soon as we hit a certain point and your body realizes that it's not pregnant, or your client's body realizes it's not pregnant, it then starts to shed the lining, the progesterone goes down, the corpus luteum gets destroyed. In pregnancy, though, the signal is, hey, we have a live one, and it maintains the corpus luteum, and then the corpus luteum takes over producing the huge amounts of progesterone that we need during pregnancy. It's disrupted by antiprogestins in the environment. So just as there are estrogen antagonists in the environment, there are also antagonists to progesterone. And here's the deal. With progesterone, it's really important to keep your diet intact. Deficiencies of B6 and also issues with the diet. So it's depleted by nutrient deficiencies. Here's the thing with progesterone. Progesterone resistance is often overlooked. Just as you can have insulin resistance and thyroid resistance, you can have progesterone resistance. And also I'll talk about in the second part of the presentation, you can also have estrogen resistance. That's just been identified, a few papers on that this year. But progesterone resistance. So when you're dealing with somebody and you're looking at their levels and you go, huh, this person has signs of progesterone deficiency, but holy cow, their progesterone levels are just fine. What's the deal? Right? It's the same as when you look at thyroid hormones. You go, wow, lab tests look normal. What's the problem? Resistance. So whenever you're thinking about these hormones and you're looking at levels and going, huh, looks pretty normal. What the heck's going on? Think hormone resistance. And there's a lot of things that can damage the hormone receptors. And we'll take a look at what some of those are. Before we do that, let's look at natural progesterone versus what's commonly prescribed as progesterone, which is Provera. Provera is a synthetic. You might ask the questions, well, if bioidentical stuff is available, why would pharmaceutical companies even make the synthetics? Why would they make something like that? And the answer is patent. You can patent a synthetic that looks similar to progesterone, and you can charge a lot more money for it because it's a patented drug. There's no money to be made by the pharmaceutical companies in something that's natural that you can buy for $20 a jar over the counter. They're going for the big bucks. You get a prescription. The prescriptions sell for $80 to $100 bucks per prescription. And they found in the Women's Health Initiative and some of the other longer-term studies, we're looking at the safety of hormone replacement therapy. And they found that the problem is they're using synthetic progesterone, which is Provera, which is a progestin, and they're using horse urine estrogen, which is Premarin. So Premarin and Provera are dangerous as estrogen replacement therapy. I don't think anybody argues that. But putting back in what your body normally makes is not going to have the same dangers. And I'm not saying this because I'm a big proponent that you should be recommending everybody go on them. I avoid it as much as we can. We use the diet, et cetera. But I just don't want people to have that fear around it because it actually can be protective. Look at the molecule. Again, we looked before at the difference between bioidentical estrogen and horse estrogen. They're very different. How could we expect that molecule to have the same effect in the body? Always go for bioidentical. When if you're talking to a person and they're on any synthetic stuff, have the conversation with them. You can't tell them to go off of it, but you can give them research that says maybe you should look at another alternative. So I wanted to just show the difference between estrogen and progesterone. Again, they have majorly different functions in the body, but they look similar. Well, this is the steroid ring center, but there's a little bit of a difference on one end. There's a hydroxy versus an oxygen, a double bond to oxygen versus a hydroxy. There's a CH3 group off of the one end of progesterone, but not on estrogen. And then you've got a hydroxy at the end of the estrogen instead of the CH3 and the oxygen. So there's some major differences between these. What you're going to see a little bit later when I show you the picture is that estrogen and testosterone are a lot more similar than estrogen and progesterone. It's wild. Yet that makes the difference between sexes. So let's look at what progesterone does. One of the keys with hormones and other molecules in the body is the shape matters. We've got the lock-in key mechanism related to allergies and androgens. We've got the hormone receptors are looking for a particular shape. And just because it binds because it's similar enough, it doesn't mean that it's going to have the same function. And that's the problem with the environmental stuff, right? The environmental xenoestrogens and progestins is that when they go into the body, they bind. But they tie up the receptor, but they can't have the same function. So progesterone helps with calming effects, building bone. It's a natural diuretic and a fat burner. It helps to restore proper cellular oxygen levels, improves vascular tone, normalizes blood clotting, prevents cyclic migraines and arterial plaque. Cyclic migraines are very common, and it's usually related to an estrogen dominant situation, the ratios of the various hormones. Progesterone in the right amounts can help prevent that. Helps to balance the actions of estrogen. The proliferative actions of progesterone are balanced by the anti-proliferative effect of progesterone. But progesterone also promotes ER-beta binding, ER-beta receptors. Remember those, the protective ones. It acts with estrogen and testosterone to prevent cancer and other degenerative diseases. So it helps to take some of the negative effects of estrogen, i.e. the binding to the alpha versus the beta receptors, and also works with testosterone. Low progesterone can cause irritability, anxiety, obsessive behaviors, weight gain, itching, bloating, sweating, digestive problems, flatulence, and loss of memory. Basically, anything that your client might be presenting with, you need to rule out that they don't have a progesterone problem. And in fact, progesterone therapy, slapping on progesterone cream, became very popular. That progesterone can help anything. And so a lot of people will get helped by buying just a jar of progesterone cream and slapping it on. Now, you want to make sure that you're aware that progesterone cream is not just wild yam. It's taken from wild yam, it's derived from wild yam, but it needs to be enzymatically changed in the lab. Your body doesn't have the ability to turn the wild yam into natural progesterone. So the creams, you have to make sure you get a real cream that's not just wild yam in a jar, that it is actually been enzymatically changed and it has actual progesterone. But people get great results from it. Am I a fan of just giving somebody a jar of progesterone cream and seeing how it works? No, I'd rather make an intelligent decision as to whether they need it and help to them to bring balance. The signs of progesterone deficiency and the signs of ER beta deficiency are the same. So when you're looking to see if you think somebody has a problem with progesterone or ER beta, and we start, of course, with our history. They may have a history of endometriosis or severe dysmenorrhea. They may have fibrocystic breasts, tenderness, or breast cancer. They may also have fibroids in their uterus. It's usually an imbalance between progesterone and estrogen. They can have ovarian cysts and polyps. Insomnia is big. And some people take oral progesterone. Usually the cream doesn't work quite as much because you don't get as high a dose. But a higher dose of oral progesterone, sublingual, taken at bedtime, can help insomnia in a lot of cases. Not all cases, because not all insomnia is caused by a progesterone deficiency, right? Anxiety, fearfulness, and nervousness can be caused by progesterone and ER beta deficiency. Moodiness, anger, depression, fatigue, poor concentration. So again, just about everything that people who are complaining about menstrual-related and menopausal-related can be related to progesterone and ER beta deficiency. Breast tenderness, PMS, decreased libido, thinning bones, fibroids, water retention, fat gain around the waist, hips, or thighs, hair loss, especially a male pattern baldness, and then breast and uterine cancer. So if your person has a history of this stuff, just make sure that you're evaluating them to make sure that they don't have the progesterone deficiency, and then do some of the things that we're going to talk about from the food and herb and nutrient perspective to help bring that into balance. So progesterone inducers, how can you help a person to get more? Well, there's something called chasteberry or chasteberry berries, also called Vitex. That is a really potent promoter of progesterone. B vitamins can help. Calcium D-glucarate, progesterone cream, obviously, because it's got the progesterone right in there. Sublingual progesterone, obviously. Decreased stress, lower cortisol, because it steals away the progesterone down to make cortisol. Important stuff. So let's take a look at the female cycle. Let's just take a look at the balance. This is an important thing to understand. And when you're working with a premenstrual woman and she's having some serious problems with her cycle and you're doing some things that's not helping, or she reports that she's done everything and it's not helping, you may want to do a cycle-long hormone test. And that's where you take the hormone, you do the saliva, and you do it every few days. They give you the exact regime to do it in. And when you do that, you're going to see the levels of progesterone, the levels of estrogen, and then we'll see another chart in a bit where I'll show you also superimposed the LH, luteinizing hormone, and the FSH. So we see the estrogen is the orange and the progesterone is the purple. And in the beginning part of the cycle, the first 9 days or so, they're both low. Here's the other deal about just randomly testing people's blood for hormones. If you test it on day 8, it's going to be completely different norms than if you test it on day 16. So it doesn't really give you a good idea of what's going on. Okay, so between days 1 and 9, it pretty flatlined, really low levels. And as you go and you start to head towards the ovulation phase, you're going to see a gradual increase in estrogen. And that gradual increase in estrogen is triggered by follicle-stimulating hormone. We'll see that on the next one. It peaks. Estrogen peaks LH causes the ovulation to occur, the egg to be released. Once that happens, the estrogen starts to drop. As soon as the estrogen starts to drop, the progesterone picks up, starts to build up that uterine lining, because don't know if we're going to have a baby that month. And so it builds up the uterine lining, and then the estrogen starts to peak again, not as high as it did the first time, but it comes up again towards the end, and then the progesterone falls off, the lining sheds. That's a good pattern. If you were to do one of the cycle-long tests and you see something different from this, this is going to give you clues. If you see that they don't have that big peak in progesterone, and say they've been having trouble with PMS and with fibroids, or they're having difficulties getting pregnant or staying pregnant, I mean, related to that. And you can really see this when you map it out. And most of the labs that do this will give you a map like this. So let's look in a little bit more detail at the really heavy-duty interaction between ovulation, all the hormones, the body temperature, and the lining of the menstrual, of the uterus. So we see that in terms of body temperature, and sorry, these are in centigrade rather than Fahrenheit, but you get the idea. The temperature is low at the beginning part of the cycle. The temperature goes high and it peaks at ovulation, and it stays high throughout the whole second half, and then it starts to drop. One of the easiest and cheapest way for a woman to kind of guess if she's pregnant, trying to get pregnant, and goes beyond the 28 days and the period hasn't come, is take the temperature. So if you've been plotting your temperature throughout, and the temperature will stay high and go even higher if pregnancy is achieved. So if the temperature is back down to what it was in the beginning part of the cycle, the follicular phase of the cycle, it indicates probably not pregnant. Okay, so it's just a cheap and easy way to kind of guess at that. So that's the body temperature, right? If you look at the top, look at what's happening. You've got follicles just gradually getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger throughout the beginning part of the cycle. And that we're looking right at the top here, right? You have a maturing follicle, it gets bigger and bigger. And then right at ovulation, that follicle breaks out. The egg actually breaks out of the follicle. The follicle itself becomes the corpus luteum. It stays there as a corpus luteum. If pregnancy isn't achieved and the progesterone drops, that corpus luteum degenerates. If pregnancy is achieved, then the corpus luteum stays it stays strong, it starts to take over the production of progesterone, makes lots of progesterone, and keeps the pregnancy intact. So that's the first two things at the top of this chart, the ovulation histology and the temperature. So let's look at what's hormonally going on. The first part of the cycle is called the follicular phase. That's where all the hormones are low, up until you get to somewhere around day 9-ish, and the estrogen starts to climb at around day 8 or 9. So right before ovulation, the estrogen starts to drop, and that's what stimulates the luteinizing hormone. The follicle-stimulating hormone peaks at the same time as luteinizing hormone. Luteinizing hormone has a little tiny window. You see it? It's the green one. It's flat, flat, flat. It peaks in that 2-day period, and then it drops back down. All it does is help that egg release, ovulation. And ovulation tests actually are testing for the presence of luteinizing hormone. Okay, so unfortunately, if you're trying to not conceive, then you might find out too late if you're going by luteinizing hormone. So you can caution people, if they're trying not to conceive and they're using those ovulation tests as a predictor, it may be too late. You might have already had sex a couple of days before the sperm lives and gets at the egg. But if they're trying to get pregnant, it's a really good window. And as soon as they see the temperature going up and the thing turning color, that luteinizing hormones, that's the time to have sex and try to create that baby. So if that doesn't happen, luteinizing hormone just goes right back down. Progesterone goes up. They're both up in the second part of the cycle, and then they both drop down, and then you go back into the follicular phase. When we're doing one of these tests, I recommend doing the expanded test so you look at FSH and LH, so you see what's happening, because the problem with a low progesterone might be because of low luteinizing hormone or follicle-stimulating hormone, or it could be any number of things. So if the FSH is low, it's not going to stimulate the egg to mature and then be released. Okay, and then you can have an anovulatory cycle where it never gets released. You can see at the bottom, the red first part is follicular, the second part is luteal. If you're looking at one day of the cycle to do a saliva test, I mean, same as blood test, it's just, it depends on what you want to capture. You don't capture the whole thing if you just do one. If they're postmenopausal, it doesn't matter what day they do. But if they're premenopausal, I would probably go for that later in the cycle phase, maybe around day 23, where the progesterone and estrogen are supposed to be high at their high points. If you look at the very bottom, it's showing you the endometrial histology. That's the lining of the uterus, right? During the period, you can see that there's a big buildup on day one because there's all that extra buildup. And by the time you get to day eight, all of that's shed. But then as soon as it sheds, it starts to grow again. And at the end of the cycle, you've got a big, thick endometrial wall that then gets shed again. So that's the story with female hormones.